WFAE streaming is sponsored by Corporate Information Technologies, a local IT company assisting business and taking a proactive approach to technology. CIT, let us show you how good IT can be. corp-infotech.com.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. It has been said that Aaron Copland's Appalachian Spring captures the essence of an ideal America, one of open fields and endless possibilities. Perhaps that is why it struck such a chord in the American musical heart. But when Aaron Copland wrote the piece, he had no idea what would become of it, and he simply titled it Ballet for Martha. That Martha was Martha Graham, who had been commissioned to choreograph the ballet and dance the leading role. It was an artistic marriage that led to artistic triumph, the creation of one of the iconic pieces in the history of dance, one that helped cement Martha Graham's place in the pantheon of groundbreaking choreographers. The Martha Graham Dance Company continues to be one of the most revered companies in the world, and the UNC Charlotte College of Arts and Architecture is hosting them for their first performance in the Queen City in more than 30 years. And in a collaboration with the UNC Charlotte Department of Dance and one of Martha Graham's former dancers, the performance will include the premiere of one of Graham's lost works. And joining us to tell us all about this major dance event is Kim Jones, that former member of the Martha Graham Dance Company and now assistant professor of dance at UNC Charlotte. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Well, thank you for having
us. You look just like a dancer. You're dressed like a dancer. Jean Marie Higgins is assistant professor of dramaturgy at the school. Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome. And Meg Whalen is back. She is director of communications in the College of Arts and Architecture and also a professor of American music there. Thank you for being here as well.
Thank you.
What made the Martha Graham Dance Company so groundbreaking, so iconic? Nobody wants to talk about that.
Martha Graham had a different way of looking at life than the dances that were happening of her time in the early 20th century. And she focused on the humanity, what was going on in the world, and focusing on the breath of movement and the weight of the world, what was happening, and she had something to say.
Who did she influence?
She influenced the greats of the 20th century. She collaborated with people like Isamu Noguchi, who helped shape her vision. She influenced Merce Cunningham, Paul Taylor, all of the modern dancers that had followed after her in the 50s, 60s, and today.
She has been compared to, her influence on dance has been compared to Picasso's influence on art and Stravinsky's influence on music and even Frank Lloyd Wright's influence on architecture. What made it stand out? From a dancer's point of view, there was before Graham and there's after Graham. So
yes.
What did she do that made her stand out and that changed dance for dancers and for the audiences who enjoy it?
In her earlier period, she stripped away from decorum and focused on the human body and the human emotion. So it was very different from the time of her experiences with Ruth St. Ennis and Ted Shawn and in vaudeville. And the Busby Berkeley era, she really wanted to focus on emotion and what the conditions of the soul.
I'm surprised that you brought vaudeville and Busby Berkeley into this conversation. Because,
I love that stuff.
Yes, but, I'm such a surprise because you think of this as being – that's show business. And what Martha Graham and other classically trained dancers are is art. It's ballet. It's not the same thing as Busby Berkeley. And yet you brought it in. Why?
To me, dance is dance, and we all cross over. I don't think there are purists in every form. However, most dancers have experienced and tasted it all, or most of it. And I think that was something that she had to experience to move away from. Mm-hmm. And many dancers of my time have – we've all worked in Broadway. We've all worked in the opera. We've all worked on the concert stage. Many dancers today do Nutcracker, and then they'll go on stage with the Graham Company. To me, dance doesn't have these boundaries that are spoken of. I think it actually opens up doors across the spectrum.
You danced at one time with the company, but I'm not sure that you danced with the company when she was still alive. She died in 1991, did she?
She did, and I was in college, my first year of college.
You're not that old. Come on.
No. Well, actually, I was in high school when she died, and I had high school teachers that had studied in the Martha Graham style and had exposed public school students to her work.
You can still see Martha Graham. She's very accessible thanks to YouTube. In fact, you can see Appalachian Spring on YouTube, the entire thing. It was a production, I think, done by a PBS station in black and white, exquisitely photographed in black and white. Mm-hmm. And it's on YouTube, and we have a link to that, I believe, on our website at WFAE.org. But
I wanted to just give a mention to the dancer that's dancing with her, Stuart Hodes, who is my mentor.
Oh.
And he's still alive today, and he's a wonderful man.
Now, which one is he?
He's the husbandman.
He's the husband. When you watch her dance, she choreographed many of the dances that she's famous for herself to dance. How unusual is that in the world of dance for the choreographer to be the star, the lead?
I think that's less common today in the contemporary world, but in her time it was quite common. And I think – I'm not sure exactly where that comes from, but I'm assuming that was an experience that she had with Rue St. Denis. And if you look at her contemporaries, they all danced in their own work, like Doris Humphrey and Charles Wideman. They all had danced in their own works.
But she became known as one of the most extraordinary dancers, not just – in America of her time, but of all time. Why?
I have to say you have to experience the technique to understand the why, because I don't think I knew the why until I embodied the work. And I think for me, there's something very deep in her work, in the expression, and it comes down to the breath and how the torso embodies these emotions and extends out the limbs. The use of space, the sense of gravity, the sense of weight, the parallel position. I think there's a lot of things that she took from the pedestrian world and had put it on stage of that time, and how it is today. It's viewed and experienced, I think, differently.
When you, as a dancer, come to Martha Graham and one of her pieces for the first time, and I'm not sure you can remember this, I suppose. What does it do for you as a dancer? How does it treat you as a dancer? How do you as a dancer adapt to it? What does it challenge you to do?
Well, I'll go back a bit. The first time I experienced any of her repertory pieces was in the summer intensive at the Martha Graham School as a student. And so I had spent many, many weeks and months embodying the technique and couldn't understand where it was going until I embodied some of the work. So I was able to put the technique into motion. And that's when it clicked. That's when it registered for me. And that experience was really exciting because the work is very rigorous. It requires a lot of strength, a lot of discipline, and just standing still.
When I watched Appalachian Spring, a lot of these dancers are motionless for a very long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I
like
thought,
tableaus.
They're not even blinking. Mm-hmm. It's unbelievable.
And that requires a lot of discipline and to be still, to be in the moment. And Martha asks you to be be in the moment, yeah. be here now.
She was remarkable, at least to my way of thinking, remarkably prolific. She worked for 70 years, and she created, I think, more dances than anyone ever.
Mm-hmm.
Where did it come from in her, and why did she feel the need to be so creative so often? I'm not sure who to ask. Anybody can jump in and answer these questions, not just Kim.
I think she just had a love for life and had a lot to say. She regarded herself as a dancer, so she wanted to dance her works. I don't think she thought of herself as a choreographer right away, and it took many years to establish that, probably for herself. And she just wanted to dance. She wanted to dance these stories, these different aspects of life that she was experiencing. From what I've heard from my teachers, Pearl Lang and Linda Hodes, that Martha moved forward. She didn't look back. Mm. So she was dancing the story of the day.
Yeah. You've mentioned some people that perhaps most of our listeners, I wouldn't have known who they were. Ruth St. Denis, and you alluded to Ted Shawn and the Denis Shawn School of Dancing and Related Arts, which Martha Graham began studying in 1910.
Mm-hmm. I think it's 1916, but
okay. Well, it was the early 20th century, mm-hmm. and we don't know these people. And she says that they were everything that she did was influenced by them. They were her major influences. Why then do we not know them?
That's a good question. I think their works have been lost, and a lot of it isn't as recorded. There's a few pieces that are recorded, and if you come to the show, you'll see several of the pieces that Ruth St. Denis and Ted Shawn had performed. So you'll see the Incense, and you'll see Nocien, and I think those are the only two pieces from the Denis Shawn repertory.
Right, the program opens with works, Denis Shawn works, to show the root.
The root. Can you see Martha Graham in those works?
I haven't seen them yet, okay. So Kim will have to answer.
I have seen
that.
The Incense, and it is a beautiful piece. When I was in college, it was the first piece I had seen in American Modern Dance live, and that was performed by Deborah Zoll at St. Mark's Church in Manhattan, and I thought it was absolutely stunning. And I've seen Catherine Crockett, who is a current principal dancer, perform it, and she is just stunning. It's a beautiful work.
Mm-hmm. Once she stopped dancing, Martha Graham, she fell into a depression and alcoholism, and she said it was because it wasn't until years after that I had relinquished a ballet that I could bear to watch someone else dance it. I believe in never looking back, something you just said,
mm-hmm.
Never indulging in nostalgia or reminiscing. Yet how can you avoid it when you look on stage and see a dancer made up to look as you did 30 years ago, dancing a ballet you created with someone you were then deeply in love with, your husband? I think that is a circle of hell Dante omitted.
Mm-hmm.
She also said that when she stopped dancing, she lost her will to live, and she was hospitalized for all this. What brought her back?
I wasn't there to know firsthand, but from the stories I've heard, many of the dancers in her company helped nurse her back to life and back to her work. And I'm not sure who in particular to speak of, but I do know that the dancers kept her company going and kept her organization going and the school running.
Mm-hmm.
And she just must have had a lot of great people around her.
There's a line in a chorus line that says, a dancer dances.
Mm-hmm.
But dancers have short lives. So when a dancer can no longer dance, it must hit with a particularly big impact, huh?
It's very difficult.
Yeah. We have to take a break. The Martha Graham Dance Company is coming to the Knight Theater on January 18th at 8 p.m., thanks to UNC Charlotte, and we will talk about that connection and more when we come back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Pearl Vision, providing annual eye exams, eyewear, and accepting major insurance plans, including iMed Vision Insurance. Details at pearlvisioncharlotte.com. Nobody cares for eyes more than Pearl. With President Obama's reelection, the Affordable Care Act has survived, and now leaders in each state have decisions to make on how to execute various provisions of the law, such as insurance exchanges and expanded Medicare Medicaid, or whether or not to let the federal government step in and do that for them. Some states, of course, continue to resist aspects of the plan, and we'll look at the likely choices newly elected Governor Pat McCrory and our Republican legislature will make tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, as snowstorms hit the Middle East, life for 600,000 Syrian refugees grows more precarious. The human face of Syria's civil war.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon right after Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're with Kim Jones, former member of the Martha Graham Dance Company and an assistant professor of dance at UNC Charlotte. UNC Charlotte is bringing the Martha Graham Company to Charlotte for the first time in 30 years, the Knight Theater on January 18th. Jean Marie Higgins is also with us, an assistant professor of dramaturgy at UNC Charlotte, involved in helping recreate one of the lost works of Martha Graham, which we'll talk about. And Meg Whalen is not only director of communications in the College of Arts and Architecture, but a professor of American music, and also used to be with the Charlotte Symphony years ago. So she doesn't want me to call her an expert, but she's knowledgeable about music. Let's say that. And she's at UNC Charlotte as well. The Martha Graham Dance Company has not been in Charlotte for 30 years, and the pieces that they will be performing when they come have never been performed here, including Appalachian Spring. How is that possible?
Well, it is certainly a surprise. We know that the Martha Graham Company has only been in this immediate region three times ever. And the first two times the company came, they came to Winthrop, to Rock Hill, in the 30s and then again in the 50s. And then we're here in Charlotte in 1981. So I guess the first reason is that the company has only been here the three times. And I don't know, Kim, you might know, how common it is for other dance companies to present Appalachian Spring. But I would imagine
I think it's
rare.
It's a work that's been licensed. I don't know how many times, but I know that several schools or ballet companies actually have to
do it. Right. Mm-hmm. But at the North Carolina Dance Theater here, they do not do Graham works typically, and so that's probably one of the reasons it hasn't been done here.
Do we know why they don't do Graham works?
I'm not,
for the most part.
And that I don't know.
If you don't know the answer, you don't know the answer. That's fine. Mm-hmm. Why the connection between UNC Charlotte and Martha Graham? Is it because of you, Kim? I mean, who decided to bring the company here from UNC Charlotte, or ask the company to come, or arrange for this to happen? Because it's more than just bringing the company, which mm-hmm. we'll talk about. There's more to this than just that.
I was invited to restage a large group piece that Martha Graham had originally choreographed in 1935 at Bennington College. And so I decided that would be great. I was hired as a regisseur.
And define that word.
A regisseur is a ballet term, a French word that's mm-hmm. used for a person that restages masterworks. And so when the company had layoff periods, I would work as a regisseur around the world restaging Martha Graham works. And that had led me to the invitation by Janet Elber, who's the artistic director of the Graham Company, to reconstruct or reanimate the lost solo.
And does this come from when you reconstruct a work? I think Panorama is the work you're
Correct.
Talking about. That was first done at Bennington College.
Right.
When you reconstruct that, what are you working from? Are you working from memory because you did the dance with the company? Are you working from something that's written down? Are you working from film or video? Where does it come from?
Well, I work from several things. One, from memory. I performed it at the Spoleto Festival in 1994 in Italy.
In Italy?
And with Giancarlo Minotti there, Isn't present. That was incredible.
I covered the Spoleto Festival in Italy 100 years ago. And for those people who go to Charleston to see it, it's wonderful. But it's magnificent in Italy.
It was the first time I was ever abroad.
Yeah.
And it was quite an experience. But I have some memory, but memory doesn't always give me the truth. And so there was a former dancer who created, and her name is Sandy Kaufman. She created a notation system with, I believe, Peggy Lyman, who is a former principal dancer with the Graham Company and current teacher at the school. And they created this notation booklet with counts, the scores included, the actual movement design, the stage design, the timing, and it's broken into four different sections.
Wow.
So with memory, with a video of a 1994 performance and this notation, it's allowed me to restage it.
That's passion.
Panorama.
Panorama.
And also I counsel dancers in New York City that have performed it. So I've gone up once a month to work on the other solo, and I was able to meet with some dancers that were in Panorama with me and say, you know, do you remember this section? What did we do here? And so that's how we pieced it together.
So what is on the we're going to talk about Imperial Jester, which is the lost dance of Martha Graham from the 1930s in a second. But aside from that, Appalachian Spring and Panorama, there are other dances on the program. So who chose what was going to be performed and why?
Well, the Graham Company chose the other works other than those three. We specifically, of course, wanted to do Imperial Gesture because that is the root. Mm-hmm. And you ask, how is it that we're bringing the Graham Company here? It's because Kim does have this long association with the company, but also her research project is to bring this Imperial Gesture piece back to life. And that's something she's been working on for a couple of years. And we decided we wanted it to re-premiere, to be seen in Charlotte before it was seen anywhere else. And we also wanted to bring the company to do Appalachian Spring because of the importance of that music. And it gave us an opportunity to forge a connection between our Department of Dance and our Department of Music. And so for Appalachian Spring, we are performing live music, and we're using a number of our faculty members to do so. And so that was another impetus. So we said we really want to do Appalachian Spring because it hasn't been done here, and it's such a fabulous piece, and it forms that connection. We really want to do Imperial Gesture because that is the research project that Kim and Jean Marie have been working on. And then Panorama is actually a student work. And so this also fulfills part of our mission as a university. We're a research institution, but of course we're an educational institution. And it has allowed Kim to work since September, all these months, with a group of 41 dancers. Some are our own students, but not all. Many of them come from across the community. They're high school kids. They're high school dance teachers. They're kids who are in the School of the North Carolina Dance Theater. And so she has been able to train them, some local professionals, train them in the Graham technique, which is a very specific technique, all these months. And then they get to perform on the stage with the Graham Company.
And again, this piece was choreographed by Martha Graham for Bennington College. So it was
for
it was designed for students, which makes it an ideal piece.
Right.
Betty Ford was the original cast member.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
First Lady Betty Ford.
Yes.
Really?
That's a kind of neat fact.
Yeah, and then later the Fords, I think, awarded the Medal of Honor or something to Martha Graham later in her life because they had a connection.
Wow.
Betty Ford and Martha Graham for their whole lives.
Let's begin with Aaron Copland and Appalachian Spring. You mentioned you'll have live music for that, and the performance of Appalachian Spring that we played at the beginning of the program was Leonard Bernstein conducting the New York Philharmonic. The piece was rescored for orchestra. When Martha Graham originally choreographed it, she choreographed it to music as Aaron Copland originally scored it, which I think it was, 13 or 17 musicians?
13 instruments, right.
And people marveled at how much music, how much sound he got out of those 13 musicians.
Right, but it is a different sound. Excuse me. The music that you played is a full orchestral version of it, and the ballet, the original 13-instrument version, has a sort of a spare and more open sound to it because it is fewer instruments.
And actually would probably be more suitable for what he was trying Well, he didn't know what he was trying to say, which we'll talk about, but what she was trying to say in terms of Appalachian, the feeling of being in the mountains and out there in the wilderness, it's the sparsity of the music kind of feeds into that.
Well, it does, and I think, you know, on the one hand, he did not know that there was going to be a storyline to this. He did not know it was going to be called Appalachian Spring. I believe the title came from a Hart Crane poem, and Martha did choose all of that afterwards, but what he did know was Martha Graham's technique. He knew the style of her choreography, and what he was trying to capture musically was that look and that feel, and he really does it. That's what's so remarkable. Yes. Is you can listen to that music, and then you can watch on YouTube or come to the concert and see it, and you see in the choreography the exact same angles and rhythms and shapes that he creates orally. It's really a remarkable thing.
He called it Ballet for Martha because he didn't know, I guess he was just commissioned to write a piece of music for the company, and he did, and then she decided to call it Appalachian Spring. I guess she heard something in the music that triggered that thought?
You know, I don't know. I'm not sure.
I do know they had dialogue as he was working on his score, that there was lots of letters back and forth, and Janet Elber has talked about that in a public forum, about how there were other characters in the piece, and there was she had a narrative base that they were working with.
Talk about the characters in the piece, because I watched
And it's a Shaker theme.
Yes, I watched the whole thing on YouTube. It's broken up into four segments, I think, and so you have to go click through to each segment. And I watched it, and I think that if you don't know the story, you can come up with a story of your own. But it wasn't always clear to me what she was trying to do. So tell me the story.
Well,
somebody tell me the story. Fight amongst yourselves.
Well, in the story, there's characters. There's a husband and wife, and they're a new couple.
Right.
And they are in the frontier of their of a new place. And there's a preacherman and a pioneer woman and four followers who are the youth of the town. And so it has a beautiful story of hope, of a new beginning, of a new frontier, new space, new family, new environment. But there's strife within the piece, you'll see. There's definitely moments of strife and tension, and that's left for the audience to take a look at. And
the preacher seems rather severe.
He's very severe.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And the followers are devout followers.
Devout, yes.
And the
husband character seems pretty stoic.
Absolutely.
But I pretty much got the story right then. I'm pleased with myself. Or I should be pleased with her because she made it very clear, I guess. She worked with a lot of different composers through her life, a lot of major composers during her life. How many pieces did she collaborate with on with Aaron Copland?
I believe this is the only one. Yes, she, as you say, she chose many important composers. What I find especially exciting is that she often chose American composers, and some of the primary American composers of the 20th century, not only Copland, but Samuel Barber and William Schumann, and then lesser-known composers like Wallingford Rieger and others who were part of that kind of 30s and 40s, very particular American group of artists who were, first of all, trying to create a uniquely American sound in music and technique, I think, on the stage. And certainly there were painters doing the same in the visual arts world. And also through the 30s and 40s, really trying to connect to, as Kim said earlier, what was going on in the world and what was going on in the United States, and create music and dance and art that reflected the people, that spoke to the people, and that maybe uplifted the people in a time of you know, hardship.
Yeah, this is the same period of time that Radio City Music Hall was being built in, the whole Radio City complex. And if you walk through that complex, there are these murals on the walls that really celebrate the American psyche, the American worker, industrialism, and human contributions to it, and the American contribution to it. And you're talking about this is the same period, that's what she has achieved in a lot of her works, correct? Because she really was. Didn't she do a whole piece on the workers' movement or in support of, am I thinking somebody else?
What you may be thinking is that Imperial Gesture was first performed for a workers. Jean Marie, why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, when Imperial Gesture premiered in November of 1935, and then just a little while later, she performed the piece again at a workers' rights kind of artist-driven rally in support of workers' rights with other really significant composers, choreographers at the time. Charles Wideman, I know, and I believe Doris Humphrey. I could be wrong, but I think that that's true. And so this was the very beginning of a lot of new scholarship that's coming out is talking about her, you know, political consciousness in the 1930s. She's very famous for saying that she didn't allow politics in her studio, but I think a lot of artists say that. But I also believe that we really celebrate her as an aesthetic innovator, as a genius. But she was also, her work, if not she, was deeply political. And it really starts in the 1930s when things, as we can all kind of imagine, are really complex in this country in terms of the workers' rights and associations with communism. But then as fascism comes in, communism is a little less undesirable to associate yourself with.
And there was a whole roster of playwrights constructing theater pieces for the American theater.
Yes, absolutely. There's the Federal Theater Project, and then later the Federal Dance Project. Mm-hmm. And Federal Theater Project was very active, obviously, in the 30s. Clifford Odets sort of, you know, famously at the forefront of that in terms of American playwriting. But there are plenty of American choreographers who created works for, you know, workers' rights and also anti-fascism as the 30s kind of, you know, go on.
We'll come back to Appalachian Springs. Since we're talking about Imperial Gesture, this is probably one of the more exciting things on this concert schedule because it's never been seen before by anybody alive. She danced it in 1935, and it's never been seen since. Why? I mean, she was so prolific.
She performed it for 2 years after that, and then she, like many of her other works, she released them and moved on to other new works. Mm-hmm. And so it came upon to me about 2 years ago by the artistic director as an invitation. We're focusing on the 30s. Would you be interested in reanimating or reconstructing a lost solo?
And this is interesting because it was never put on film.
No.
There was no videotape back
then.
There was
none.
And I would think nobody who may have been in the company when she danced it is with us.
No longer. I've tried to find one living witness, but I was unsuccessful. But.
So the story of putting this lost piece of choreography back and bringing it back to life is interesting and exhausting. Where did you start?
Well, I started with two to four photographs. I think four photographs and two reviews, and I thought, am I crazy? What am I doing? Why would I take on such a project? But it was exciting.
Four photographs?
Four photographs.
What does the photographs tell you?
Now I can see the dance, now that I have more of the research done. But the first time I was just in awe looking at these four photographs and how her use of fabric and what she was trying to say in this title, Imperial. I mean, I think it said something like, Imperial dance, the dance of sycophancy, and the dance of arrogance. And I thought, well, what am I going to do with this? But then over time, I had discovered 34 photographs were released by the Barbara Morgan Foundation. And then I found many, many reviews.
Well, we have to take a break. We'll come back and we'll pick it up where we left off as we talk about the Martha Graham Dance Company coming to Charlotte on January 18th at the Knight Theater. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Fisher & Phillips, LLP, a national labor and employment law firm representing employers in North Carolina from the Charlotte and Columbia offices. Partner Mason Alexander and Fisher & Phillips on the web at laborlawyers.com. As snowstorms hit the Middle East, life for 600,000 Syrian refugees grows more precarious. The human face of Syria's civil war, the topic of the Diane Rehm Show in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock. By the way, information about what we're talking about today, about the Martha Graham Dance Company coming to Charlotte and their performance, is available for you right now at our website at wfae.org/Charlotte Talks. And if you'd like to join our conversation, now's the time. 704-926-WFAE. That's 704-926-9323, 800-603-WFAE, or online at wfae.org/Charlotte Talks. We're coming right back.
What's this?
Public Radio Remix. The best public radio stories, documentary audio, big ideas, and cool sounds.
Now they're both in a trance. Perhaps they're listening to another dramatic radio episode.
A new kind of public radio. Saturday, 9 to midnight on WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Kim Jones is with us. She's a former member of the Martha Graham Dance Company and assistant professor of dance at UNC Charlotte. Meg Whalen is also at UNC Charlotte, at the College of Arts and Architecture, professor of American music there. And Jean Marie Higgins, who worked with Kim Jones on reconstructing this lost Martha Graham dance, Imperial Gesture. She's an assistant professor of dramaturgy at UNC Charlotte. I have to ask, I always associate dramaturgs with theater and scripts. How do you figure into dance?
Well, dancers, choreographers use dramaturgs to help reconstruct works because we have skills in research, and not just research into theater and dance, but sort of research more broadly construed. So the reason I like to work with dance is because it is, well, a couple of reasons, but what Kim is trying to do is to reconstruct a dance that doesn't have any record. And so she's not going to be exactly recreating the dance, but she's going to take as much evidence as she can possibly find and then translate that with her team into a reanimation of the dance. This is what we're trying to call it, sort of breathing life into it again. So I love working with dance for that reason, but also because there's just a... In a way, I'm kind of an outsider, and I can be a really good audience member for Kim and just kind of watch what's going on and reflect back to her what I see without any sort of insider knowledge.
Now, Kim said before the break that you started with four photographs and some reviews of her performance. But you went on to say in the break that when you start looking, you can find tons of material about this. What kinds of material did you find?
Well, I moved forward with the project, and I found that you said it perfectly, dramaturg triage. I would approach Jean Marie before I asked her to join the team of artists, and I'll explain to you who they are in a minute, with questions. And I thought, well, Jean Marie, would you like to be a part of this project? And she said, absolutely. And she had found so many reviews, and we found a poem, we found stage rendering of the spatial diagram, and then I took all my resources and went to dancers who danced with Martha Graham in the 1940s for counsel. So I was able to ask them, so what choices would Martha Graham have made during this time period in 1935? What do you see here? And so Linda Hodes and Ethel Winters was able to help me piece together some sequencing based on the technique that I had embodied while I was in the Graham Company. So in my time with the Graham Company, we focus on the works of the 1930s. So in my body, I had some of that repertory, some of that way of moving, moving among the masses. What does that feel like against tension? And so,
why did she not write this down? This dance.
Martha Graham did write a lot of her works down in notebooks, and they're lost. A lot of them have been lost. So I would probably imagine that it is in a journal somewhere. But
how is that
sure
possible?
That
with somebody
be.
Who turns out to be as influential on a art form as Martha Graham was, that things get lost. Her creative process is lost. We have scores from Beethoven, for crying out loud. Mm-hmm. Why don't we have her material?
Well, there's a few possible reasons, but we can really only guess. She was really busy. She created work after work after work. That's part of it, and then part of it is, as Kim says, no one filmed it. But it was photographed. At least there were some kind of publicity photographs or some kind of posed photographs. We really aren't ever going to know, mm-hmm. but she was, you know, choreographing a lot of pieces, and so.
And this piece, Imperial Gesture, is kind of her kick in the face to fascism, isn't it? And to Hitler, who was coming to power in Germany at the time. That's what this arrogance of power and this, what was the word? Sycophancy. That's what it's about.
And she was just invited by Hitler to open the Berlin Olympics that same year. And she refused to join because members of her troop would have been persecuted. And she stood up for her people.
And this dance grew out of that?
I can't say it was any reaction, but it was in the same year. I believe that the invitation happened about 2 months after she premiered the solo. But the solo was probably in the making during the same residency as Panorama at Bennington. Mm. Martha had danced quite a few solos in that concert. And it precedes one of the most famous Graham pieces that have been reconstructed, which is Chronicle, which happened in 1936, which talks about exile and homelessness and what's to come in Europe.
In reconstructing this work, you're not only trying to bring back the essence of Martha Graham and this piece, but you're certainly bringing back the look mm-hmm. of the costumes. You mentioned the use of fabric
right.
and the hair, even the hair. Mm-hmm. She had very distinctive
hairstyles.
Yeah. What about the fabric? Because people wrote about the fabric.
Well,
first
I want to acknowledge the team of artists that I had put together that to realize this premiere in on Thursday. And so I was able to take the FRG faculty research grant money that I received from UNC to hire one of the best Graham costume designers of our time, and that's Karen Young. And Karen Young has worked with the Graham Company for over 20 years. So I went to her first with the research. She was the first, if I call it, hire that I could make, because I knew that I could not do the dance without the costume, and it had to be the right type of costume. And so Karen has created a prototype, and she has come to every rehearsal and watched the dancer and myself move in the costume, change the fabric, and then I was able to hire the artist involved and the dancer and the composer and wow. ask Jean Marie to join, and then we also have a lighting designer.
And Jean Marie, you said that in trying to recreate dance pieces, it is not only necessary to gather evidence of how the dance might have moved and looked, but also how it made the audience feel. And in the case of Imperial Gesture, we also have information on what the audience was made to think through, I guess, reviews of the piece. But you say that sometimes we know what we know from what is not in the record. What's missing?
What's missing is a clear articulation of the subject of this dance. It's really interesting. It's like this dance became a place for people to talk about what was happening in Europe. It isn't that anyone said, this is Hitler, right, or this is Franco. Of course, it would be too early for that. But no one said, this is Germany. And so what you do find are reviewers and then theatergoers from journals who either embrace the politics of the piece or what they perceive as the politics and use it as like a call to arms for workers' rights and for democracy. Or you have reviewers from, you know, mainstream sources but also just from journals who say, this piece is not political. This piece is purely aesthetic. And it's almost like they're protesting too much. So this, you know, this piece became a way for people to talk about what was happening in this country. And it was a way for artists to talk about how they might join in the conversation. That's what I find so fascinating about the absence of evidence in this dance.
And this piece is staged to music by Lehman Engel, who was not only a composer but a conductor for a number of major Broadway plays and major Broadway cast albums in the 1950s, and went on to become a composer, arranger, conductor in television in the 1960s, and who also worked in film. I don't think many people know who Lehman Engel mm-hmm. is, but I knew who he was when his name popped up. I thought, oh, my God, Lehman Engel. How does this music work with this choreography? And well, put Lehman Engel, would me talk about music.
Well, what's interesting is you said we have scores by Beethoven, but you know what we don't have?
We don't have the score by Lehman Engel.
Really?
We're unable to find it.
It is gone. It is lost.
And so that's where I commissioned Pat Doherty, who also spent over 20 years in the Graham organization and company.
It's one of the most interesting parts of this reconstruction is the music.
It's a collaboration of artists coming together with the knowledge of experience, interest, and passion about reanimating this solo. So I asked him to commission a new score, and I trusted him.
Did he try to sound like Lehman Engel?
No, not at all.
Not at all?
I found his autobiography at the Strand in New York City, and I gave it to Pat as a present, and I said, here we go. We're going to start from scratch.
But you'll see it does. It sounds like early 20th century avant-garde piano.
Yeah, because he did know
the research is impeccable.
Lehman Engel's music, and he also is an addition
to He did his own research, right?
Yeah, he did his research.
And he's a composer, and I trust Pat with his choices. He's been an incredible player in this ensemble. He was able to come to rehearsals and ask great questions and make us think about the choices we were making in the dance. I had a stage rendering from Arch Lauder, who was there witnessing Martha's work in the 30s, and I lifted that stage space diagram, I believe. It's not a rendering. It's a space diagram, and I was able to sort of re-walk over those steps that Martha Graham had created for the solo. And so that was my structure, that stage spacing, excuse me, I keep calling it.
Not every piece is met with rave reviews. And the New York Times said of Imperial Jester that the work is not altogether successful in spite of some excellent passages and copious cheering from the house. It is something of a study in arrogance, whose ending in collapse and defeat lacks conviction except from the standpoint of left-wing wishful thinking. This from the old gray lady. As you worked on reconstructing, did you find any evidence of that, really, aside from this critic's opinion?
Evidence of
left-wing wishful thinking.
Which,
by the way, came to pass. Yes. Mm-hmm. Of course, he didn't know that at the time.
Some of the best sources for dance criticism in the 1930s are from left-wing publications, I guess you'd call them. The Daily Worker, New Masses, New Theater, and even on sort of the kind of right-wing side, Catholic World. Almost every community had a Catholic newspaper. So the debate in the newspapers is fascinating because it's political. Again, this is why there's so much evidence for how the audience felt and so little evidence for what the dance actually was, because everyone wanted to talk about what it might mean in this kind of moment before fascism really takes hold in the American imagination. So the left-wing papers loved Imperial Jester and compared every future Martha Graham solo saying, well, it's no Imperial Jester.
Put your headphones on. We'll take a couple of quick phone calls from listeners, some of whom have been hanging on for a while. Kim, welcome to the program. Hello, Kim. I think we just lost Kim. I went to her and we lost her. Thomas in Charlotte, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Morning.
I wanted to say I'm enjoying the conversation and also to make two comments. One is that I understand how difficult it is to preserve a piece of dance when there's no kind of notation for that piece of dance. It's remarkably difficult. I have some experience much earlier in my life with choreography. So it really needed the advent of video in order to preserve those pieces. I also just wanted your guest to comment, because I guess my view is that one of the real revolutions of her dance was it redefined a feminine movement from a kind of a lyrical femininity to a very powerful and womanly kind of femininity, which I think was very new for that time. And I wonder if your guests have any thoughts about that.
Okay.
I'm just getting reverb here. You can take
your headphones off.
Sorry. I just want to comment, yes, absolutely. Martha Graham showed the strength of women, not the women of just being a decorative arm piece or wallflower, but someone that has to say something. She had a lot to say and wanted to show the strength in women.
Okay.
And also the frankness of the female body. All of the movement comes from the core. It's a very embodied kind of movement that gets away from, more lyrical, balletic ways of moving.
And that's it's no very, Sugar Plum Fairy.
Exactly. And it's a very feminist statement of the time.
Thomas, thank you for your call. Kim is back with us, so we're going to put her on. Kim, welcome.
I was wondering if you have any tickets left, or is this show sold out?
Ah, good question. It's Thursday night at the Night Theater at 8 o'clock.
It's Friday.
Excuse me.
And you know, I don't know. I haven't called today to see whether there are tickets. If there are no tickets available on Friday, we have been very fortunate. Wells Fargo underwrote a free community performance on Thursday night, and those tickets have all been distributed. But there is the opportunity, I think, probably if you come on Thursday night, that there will be people who do not come who have tickets. And so if you
wanted to get tickets, where would you go?
Carolina Tix has tickets for Friday night. And then Thursday night is just a free community performance underwritten by Wells Fargo.
There's information about that on our website at WFAE.org. Faith writes, Kim is a hidden gem here in Charlotte and deserves to know that because of her, local performers will be on stage with the Martha Graham Dance Company. I'm honored to be one of the local professionals performing in Panorama. For me, dancing in Panorama is about unity, equal rights, and coming together during challenging times. It is a perfect piece to encourage a more unified dance community in the Charlotte area. It is likely that you have heard of the Nutcracker Ballet and the Sugar Plum Fairy, yet few in our city have heard about modern dancers such as Martha Graham. Martha stood her ground while threatened by Hitler in 1935 when she refused his invitation to perform in the 1936 Olympic Games. We must educate our city on the many modern dancers and choreographers who have had profound impact on our country. We must also beg Kim Jones to stay in Charlotte to continue the progress that she is making.
Thank you, Faith.
Why only one performance? Public performance.
Well, we have this underwritten special community performance, and so there really are two, but the first one was focusing on non-dance attenders, people who are coming for their first time.
If you can say it in 5 seconds.
I just want to thank all the dancers in Panorama and everyone at UNC Charlotte and Jean Marie Higgins and Meg Whalen and Blakely White McGuire. Thank you.
Kim Jones, Jean Marie Higgins, Meg Whalen, all involved in this Martha Graham Dance Company appearance, Night Theater, January 18th, 8 p.m. Thank you all.